Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Thurman, I'd like to acknowledge the contribution of Clay Van Dulis and William Blent from the University of Wisconsin for contributing to this work. So if anything goes wrong, I mean, they are the one to be discredited for this. But, okay, we'll talk about irrigation of cranberry. Essentially, it's used by a high proportion of growers using buried-type tensiometers. And we did previous work in order to derive irrigation thresholds under draining conditions, essentially using overhead irrigation systems in goat cabinet and going from wet conditions to dry conditions. And we came with a number of about 7.5 kPa to initiate the irrigation. Adequate irrigation is important because changes in water management has been related to input yield decrease for these growers. So as a result, we're still conducting work on irrigation strategies for both overhead and sub-irrigation purposes. Because irrigation, sub-irrigation can lead to important additional water savings for these growers. So there was a need to check whether these irrigation thresholds derived from overhead irrigation would apply for sub-irrigation as it was never investigated. So in cranberry beds, this crop is grown essentially in northeastern United States, in Wisconsin, as well as in Canada, in British Columbia, Quebec, and New Brunswick. And the configuration of the bed is specially designed to ease up the harvest. Essentially, you're digging ditches, you're putting drain ties within an impermeable layer, and then you overlay a layer of coarse sand of about 40 centimeters. And then you can control easily through the ditches and the drain ties, you can control easily the water table anywhere between 40 and 100 centimeters. And you can even raise it up above the crop canopy so that the fruits floats and then they are vested mechanically from the floating process. Field measurements comparing irrigation strategies have shown though drastic difference on the water desorption curve and the unsaturated hydraulic conductivity from the outer hysteresis draining envelope. And even overhead irrigation, a lot of data are situated in the inner hysteretic envelope. So that's the unsaturated hydraulic conductivity as function of water potential. That's the first set of data that we collected from the drainage of the field. But what we can see is during the field experiment that was conducted in which we compared control water table and overhead irrigation, most of the data were situated within the inner hysteresis loop. And even under overhead irrigation, which we could argue that most of the water should be on the upper side, actually, the majority of this data were located also in the hysteresis loop, more closer indeed to the bottom outer hysteresis loop. So it's likely to affect the transfer process of water and the capacity of the soil to supply the water at an adequate rate to meet the transpiration requirement of the crop in a sub-irrigation designs. So the obvious research question was, does the hysteresis phenomenon affecting sub-irrigation threshold estimation? So essentially we used the field data as well as Hydra2D to model, to investigate the sensitivity of cranberry irrigation set points to the hysteresis, the outer loop hysteresis and the environmental conditions. So actually, we need soil characteristics, so we use 63 different soil samples taken from the 0 to 15 and 15 to 30. Upon drainage, we use the instantaneous profile on the tension table. For rewetting, we use an inverted flux method, a tension disc apparatus method that we designed years ago for measuring unsaturated hydraulic conductivity upon rewetting for piecewise exponential function in coarse growing media and sand. So this is a view of the apparatus for tension, infiltrometer, instantaneous profile method, and this is the tension disk and the water table here that we can gradually rise to establish different fluxes. This is a view of the unsaturated hydraulic conductivity upon drainage and rewetting. So this is the this shows the outer hysteresis loop and the pronounced hysteretic effect for these kind of sand. So this is the average of 34 samples. And obviously, when running hydrous, you need also, if you want to fit the soil capacity to the plant requirement, you need to estimate plant requirements. So we had an estimation of crop ET from measurements in the field that was shown to vary anywhere between 1 to 3 millimeter and was affected by temperature. We also conducted growth cabinet experiment in which we created different vapor pressure deficit and in which we evaluated independently the transpiration as well as the evaporation. And we could see that basically the evapotranspiration was about anywhere between 4.5 to about 3 millimeter per day. Obviously, you've got to fit a function for the transpiration reduction in hydrous. So basically, we fitted this polygon to the quadratic shape and simply use a reduction threshold of about 7.5, which corresponded to what we've seen in previous field experiment in terms of yield effect for this crop. It's very important also that we have an adequate fit of the unsaturated hydraulic conductivity function. So we use a unique water desorption curve upon drainage and another one upon rewetting to make sure that we got very good fit for this data. And then we calibrated our model assuming that actually up to minus 8 kPa upon drainage and an average ET of 3 millimeter per day, we would have adequate water supply, after which the soil capacity to meet the crop requirement would gradually drop. So initial conditions were based on the position of the wetting of the water table in terms of metric potential, and we established we use also the initial condition for water content based on whether we were on the upper outer hysteresis envelope or the lower outer loop of the hysteresis envelope. And we estimated the proportion of the crop ET that was met by the soil over a 7-day period under transient conditions. So basically, we simulated these using hydrous deflux to the plant, and that's the dark blue line, and the magenta line simply represent what the soil was able to supply. So by calculating the surfaces, the difference in surfaces underneath the curve between that one and that one, we could and summing it up over 7 days, we could come with the proportion of ET which was met by the subirrigation by the soil itself. So the first thing that we can observe, and this figure represent as function of different initial potential in the soil and variable crop ET, the proportion of the crop ET met by the soil. So obviously our point of calibration at minus 8, we should have 100% of the crop ET met by the soil, and it decreases then as potential gets lower. And this is indeed what we have. The first thing we can observe with respect to hysteresis is the fact that for whatever the crop ET is, obviously the soil capacity to supply the water is much lower under rewetting than under drainage, which was expected from the importance of the unsaturated of the hysteretic loop effect. The second point that came out also is that the irrigation threshold not only should be adjusted according to the position of the water table, but should be adjusted according to the crop ET. And we can see that even if, for example, at 3.2 millimeter per day of crop ET, we can supply 100%. It's not the case if the crop ET gets higher to about 6 millimeter per day. So basically, it means if we're going to sub-irrigation purposes, it means that even at 1.6, Under overhead irrigation, we should run around, well, maybe minus 8, but then for if we're using sub-irrigation, if we work on the bottom part of the hysteresis loop, we should move to higher water potential values, higher thresholds. The practical implication is that the matrix potential thresholds are expected to be higher and should be field tested, because we don't know exactly where we'll fit under conditions. So I invite you to see posters by Van der Lies and Peltier looking at this effect at a field scale. There is a risk of yield drops on pronounced drought conditions if no water table control is imposed. So obviously, under high crop ET demand, we should move the water table upper and come with a transient management rather than a constant management of water tables with this kind of production. We should not move too high, though, because of the risk of asphyxia and diseases if we come too close to saturation. And studies on aeration of cranberry are ongoing, so I also invite you to visit posters by Thomas Laurent and Peltier on these questions. So in conclusion, irrigation thresholds are theoretically affected by the outer loop hysteresis. We should move from minus 8 to about minus 5, according to this model, but field validation is ongoing. And obviously, in further work, we're building integrated models in order to include evapotranspiration to adjust irrigation thresholds if we fall into these inner loops. So we're developing means of investigating whether we fit on these inner loops and then adjust the irrigation management according to this. So I'd like to acknowledge the ENSER contribution for funding this program, Orthau, Salzwedel Cranberry, Nature Canberge, Atuka Canberge Nadeau, for participating in the research, as well as the research staff of both universities. And thank you for staying as late. Thanks. The taste itself of cranberry is very acidic. Okay, so it's the cranberry we drink has sugar added in it, because otherwise it would be too acidic for people. What people are looking at are the anti-carcinogenic effects of cranberry, which is high because of they have very high proportion of antioxidant in it. And we looked at that in previous work that was just published this year. We looked at irrigation management and trying to create stress to the plant in order to increase the anthocyanin content of them, but actually we found very little effect in there. So essentially, even if we impose water restriction in grapes, for example, for wine, it would have an effect on the quality of the wine itself or some phenols production. But in the case of cranberry, we didn't measure anything important. Yes. And you want me to show it again?
Oh, it looked
impressive. yes, well, and the question is?
Whether this goes along with the assumption that there is no hysteresis with respect to water content. Can you say something
on that? I actually, because of time constraint, I didn't put the slide, but we've got the same effect for the water desorption curve. And as Jorge Vogel just presented this earlier this afternoon, we saw exactly the same transient process. So, respect to a question about the speed of tensiometer's response, this kind of behavior operates for about a full day. We see it. We see small movement in the hysteresis loop. Actually, if we go back there, we could see maybe on the unsaturated hydraulic. Wait a minute. No, that's this one here. Okay, we see here very small operating hysteresis loop, very small one. So, there is kind of, this is a non-equilibrium condition, obviously, and I think we're dealing with process of redistribution of films within the matrix itself, but they are acting over a couple of hours before there is the equilibrium.